It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For over 25 years, sisters Suzanne Vincent and Jean McKenzie Vincent have used their psychic abilities to help others. They volunteer their time to help families and police departments solve cold cases. But that's not all. They are also ghost hunters who have encountered their fair share of hair-raising situations. They join us now in studio. Suzanne Vincent, Jean McKenzie Vincent, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got Suzanne on my right, and I've got Jean McKenzie Vincent on my left.
Yes.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number 412-246-2002. And again, it is Halloween Eve, and there is a supernatural aspect to this discussion. And we'll get into the ghost hunting part of the sister's career here. But we're going to start with the work that you do that certainly can't hurt in an investigation. You both have these psychic abilities, so let's start with that. When did you first notice your psychic abilities? Suzanne, we'll start with you.
I noticed my psychic abilities when I was 4 years old. My grandmother had died suddenly, and a few days after she died, she appeared to me, and she gave me a message to give my parents. And that message was that she had hidden some money in an old oak hutch at the bottom drawer, and there were some important papers. Her being an Irish people like to, you know, put some money away. That's how Irish people are in the old days. And I delivered a message to them about where it would be at the bottom of the hutch.
And how did that message get to you?
I seen it in a vision. Grandma came to me in a vision. She was floating above the bed, and I could almost like hear her talking in my head. This was at night, and this is a few days after the funeral, and she was like talking in my head and just saying to me that I am all right, and that mom's been very worried, and grandpa's been very worried, and please give them that message. And a lot of times after that, she would visit me and give me messages. And then as I got older, I was able to start to, pick up visions or pick up vibrations around people in my mind's eye. And right about 7 or 8 years old, we start going to a spiritualist church. And a spiritualist church, their belief is you can contact the other side through a thin veil, and only certain people who are mediums have this gift. And if you have it, they can develop it and be able to contact their loved ones.
Now, going back to this vision you had of your grandmother where she's giving you this message, how did you know it wasn't a dream?
Oh, I was awake. I was awake. I woke up, and I actually heard her calling me too. She was going like, "Susie," and I woke up and I looked around, and then I just seen her. She was transparent, and she had a lot of.
She was above you. This was something you were seeing.
It was not only about maybe 2 or 3 feet above the ground and towards the very end of the bed, and she was hovering as she came close to me in this vision or this, you know, the vision I was feeling, and she was just giving me this message. I could hear it in my head. It's almost like you can see these images that she was telling me about, like where the hutch was at in the bottom of the drawer. And so I relayed that on, but just hovering around in that kind of transparency kind of energy.
Okay, and Jean, what about you? When did you first notice your psychic abilities?
Our house, when we were younger, you could feel an energy downstairs. And you could also feel the energy if you went like to get the laundry and stuff like that. You could feel it move behind you. I had pets who would also go.
Wait. Okay.
I was about 6.
Let me go back to the laundry. So you said you could feel the laundry moving behind you?
No, an energy or a spirit, whatever terminology you would like to use.
Uh-huh.
And as we were going to a spiritualist church and learning about energy and learning about that, there's evidence of people after we leave this physical body that where we become a life force or an energy force. And my mother was, you know, showing us some training. We were also going to Catholic school, so it was both types of learning. But we, in our own home, had a haunted energy in there, a very good energy, and it ended up being the old owner. But I also had pets who, when I could feel, first time feeling spirit or energy, my two dogs would also lock in on something, and they would howl a little bit. So with that kind of environmental validation, along with this feeling, that was the first time having to wrap your head around, like, what is this?
And it's something you're born with?
I think partially born, and a lot of people can feel energy. And you can acquire learning on it. Like in the courtroom, a lot of times they'll be the defendant and plaintiff, and it'll be like, I can feel the tension in the room. You can cut the tension, and that's a form of thick energy that lay people can feel, but everyone has the gift.
So is this like mind reading? Can you read minds? Can you tell what I'm thinking? Right
no,
now?
I can't.
Okay. I'm a little skeptical, but I think that's a good approach to take to this, because we'll draw out all the different things that you are capable of. How did these psychic abilities evolve into your helping law enforcement investigate cold cases?
Being very skeptical myself, having to do research, having to even think if there's even spirits or ghosts or energies, and having to go to places to either capture it on film or to go places to tap into the energy. Einstein said energy you can't create or destroy, so energy is there. So being a very skeptical person, if I'm so psychic, let me, you know, help or do something. And the vibration that you would pick up, or you'd write down, or you'd see things in moving pictures, as I went through the process, I was very skilled in remote viewing and seeing images. And there are tons of people who can do that. And so when law enforcement approaches us, you know, about something, we'll take an initial, like, energy vibe on it, and then as a process goes, we'll start seeing the remote viewing, either location or an area where, you know, something or someone might be.
So law enforcement comes to you and says, you know, so and so disappeared. They were last seen in, I'm just giving an throwing out an example. They were last seen at the corner of 18th and Carson. So then,
I can give you an example.
Sure,
a local yes. example. You know, sometimes family members will come to us about a missing person, and then they will give the information to the police officer, and they'll want to talk to us. And then sometimes we get quite a few police officers. And we had a recent case that the Westmoreland County DA contacted us on a cold case in Allegheny Township, Westmoreland County. I can't give the name. But when we went through the house, we did our forensic profiling. We were getting a vibration about who we thought did it. We were getting a vibration of an images in our head, a description of the person. And what they do is we give them leads, and they take those leads and they investigate them. And maybe they didn't, like this one particular time we walked through this house. We did it a couple different times. We picked up that the person... you know, had a mustache, had dark hair, and he was electrician. And all they said was, you know what? We think that might be this person's cousin. We had no leads. Then the police go, they go and investigate, and they try to figure out where this cousin was at and if it had anything to do with the murder.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand all this. So the Westmoreland police call you to a house where a murder has been committed.
That's correct.
Yes.
You go into the house and you pick up on a vibration. You have a vision of someone.
Oh, what happens is when we walk in, the first thing we'll do is we will sometimes, if there's clothing in the house still or an item, we'll do psychometry. We'll touch their stuff and get a vision of what happened to the victim.
So you're touching the victim's clothing.
Yeah, some clothing or a ring. And then also when we're in the house too, we can sometimes put our hands against the wall. And if there's a blood splatter or there's some other energy on the railing, we can pick up what happened in the house. So we start getting images in our mind, moving pictures of what happened. And we'll just go ahead and say we feel that this, and the police don't say anything to you. They just want to know what you know, what you can help them with the case. So we'll say, you know, while we feel very strong, this person's been shot in the chest, and we feel that there's two people involved, what we're seeing, you know, and things like that. And as we walk through, we touch stuff or we, you know, pick up on, you know, a set of keys or their clothing or even something in a railing or something inside the house, you know, or the walls, will get like an energy field.
So you tap into this, and then you're getting visions of who the perpetrator might have been.
Yes, correct. Through remote viewing, through the image, and through the energy.
My sister and I do things a little bit differently, so we have our both unique.
Like in the Westmoreland situation, she'll go on her side, I'll go on my side, and she'll have her notes, I'll have my notes, and we'll actually meditate a little bit before we get there to see what we're picking up. And then when we're done, we come together, what she has and I have, we know it's 110%, and we give it to law enforcement, and it's their job to, okay, go on these leads and you know, it helps assist as a tool to solve a case.
And did the cops ever say, are they ever skeptical or
sometimes they're very, very skeptical, but we've been referred out by other detectives, and that shows that we've worked with them, and so we are being referred by detectives, but they're always skeptical because
let's go. This Westmoreland case is intriguing. So you get a vision of a guy with a dark mustache, and so then what happens?
I'm not allowed to talk too much in detail. Another case I can give the name.
No, wait a minute. I'm trying to understand this. So you give the police this vision that you've had. You don't know that this person happens to be. What was it?
A suspect.
A suspect. You didn't know this. When you tell the police, they say, oh, okay, well, there happens to be a guy, and then they go after him.
They take a second look in their file, and then they take a second look.
Well, basically what they do is, on this particular case, they had no leads. 50 people, none. So we actually went through a couple different times at the house, and the first time we went through, and we could tell that this person was a younger person, like in the late 20s, mm-hmm. you know, 28, 29.
How could you tell?
Because we have our own language of connecting with our with spirit and our visions, and we're able to tell you what we're seeing from the victim and from and pass it on to law enforcement.
So you told the police, and the police, did they apprehend this person?
This is what they did. So what happened was we gave the information, we told him, you know, what we felt was involved, and we told him his line of work. And when we spoke to them, they said that they narrowed down to two suspects from nobody. And we went back, and we did a walkabout, and it was definitely some more information that they needed. We can tell if it's a family member related or non-family member.
And was this a family member? This guy?
I can't say right now.
Okay. All right. Is the case closed?
It's still open. Now it's up to them. They investigate. They talk. They interview witnesses and find out where this guy was at that night. And try to find some proof. And law officers put it together. Hmm. You look for the gun. You know, find out if friends knew where he was that night. It's up to them. We don't do all the legwork. It's the officers that do it. But in the John Yelnick, the dentist that was slain in Blairsville. Several years ago, we also did a walkthrough with the district attorney of Indiana County and Blairsville chief of police and several state police officers for several hours. And we gave them a lot of clues as to who killed John Yelnick. And one of the clues, which was outstanding, was that he was in a military officer before for 13 years. He went to the University of South Florida. And that
and they didn't know any of that.
And that we felt that he drove a maroon colored SUV, and they narrowed it down and to who they thought did it. But a lot of people did not believe that a state police officer would have killed him. And so the neighbor was accused of killing this person. And so we exonerated the neighbor, and the state police officer got 25 years.
At what point did police begin to take you seriously? Because I would have to think that you would have had to do something to establish some sort of credibility with the cops.
When you bring in things that was it Katanning?
Westmoreland.
What was the case that you kind of cemented your reputation as people who can legitimately help law enforcement with cold cases?
Probably a combination.
Yeah, I'd say combination. I would say probably we've worked on a lot of cases previously before John Yelnick, but I think the John Yelnick case.
Probably the John Yelnick, but we did Donnie Liszczak.
We had found Donnie Liszczak before that.
We just named who we found.
So it's gotten to the point where the police will say when they're stumped on a case, let's call in the sisters.
Yes.
Okay. We're referred out.
Yes. Or the family will get us involved, and then will happen like in another case. They passed on some information to law enforcement, and then when they talked to us, they said, we told them how this person died. And this was another girl that was found in the Allegheny River. And they had said that the coroner knows how she died, the person that killed in the police. And they said, so they would say, well, you know, how do they know that? And then how do they know all this other stuff? And so they just put it together in sequence, and that helps them to get an edge, I guess, another tool for a direction to help their
case. So validation would come from working with a skeptical detective, and then, okay, we'll give it a shot, see if the sisters can, you know, produce something. And then they find out, hey, there's something here. They actually helped us here, but it's up to them to go to pursue what came in. And then when they come back, they're like, you know, you helped us. And that's why we have been referred by detectives to other agencies. And that's how you get validated, you know, to this extent.
But we had the Texas Rangers contact us on a case. So, and like I said, we volunteer our time with the police.
I was going to ask you about that. What do you charge for this?
Nothing. We volunteer.
Why?
It's just,
you could make some money.
It's a gift. And I think, I am Catholic, and I feel that you can't do that to people in that kind of a situation.
Do you ever wish that you didn't have this ability? You get these visions, and even though you're helping, I would have to think that psychologically it's got to be somewhat of a burden, isn't it?
It's a gift, and you now we're a little older. You come to focus that, it's to help with closure and help with healing. So
you've never said, I wish I didn't have these powers. I just would like to be like everybody else.
Yeah. Oh, I've said that many times in my earlier days. Absolutely, I didn't like picking up and feeling what people who don't on the outside they look normal, but on the inside they're very bad. But now as I grew up and got older, I had my own experiences of having my gut intuition that was spot on. And then, you know, so what you see is not what you get with the person's mental or temperament can be to harm people. So you're kind of like a heads up on things. You know,
that's Jean McKenzie Vincent, and we're also talking with Suzanne Vincent. And I want to work in some calls. It's Essential Pittsburgh and the Vincent sisters. They are the psychic sisters who for over 25 years have been helping the police. They've been volunteering their help to law enforcement and families to solve cold cases, murder mysteries, and all kinds of unsolved crimes. 412-246-2002 to join our conversation. Let's work in some callers. Sue in Greentree has been waiting for a long time. Sue, you're on with the Psychic Sisters. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sue. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, hi. I was wondering if you energetically can pick up anything about a murder. Like, my grandfather was murdered and it was unsolved. He seems to, I get a sense, it sounds kind of strange, but things have been helping me.
What town was he murdered in? And what's his name?
I don't know if I can put that on the air. He was murdered in Churchill.
And has it been a number of years now?
Yes.
Okay, so at least 6, 7, or 8 years, correct?
It was in 1975.
Oh, real long ago. Okay, 1975. You know, my suggestion is if you want to contact me on my SuzanneVincent.com, I'll look into it for you.
Or what we can do is we can have, Sue, you can leave your information with our producers. We just stay on the line. They'll get your contact information. We'll pass it along to the sisters, and maybe they can help. So it sounds like you've been you've been for 40 years trying to get this solved, Sue, and so now you're thinking maybe these, what the heck, it can't hurt to involve the psychic sisters.
Yes, definitely.
That's how it usually works. Cold cases, and then ends up, you know, we'll be glad to look into it for you.
Let's go to Maura, I think, or Moria from Shadyside. Have I said that correctly?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, good. Go ahead, yes. Moria.
I just wanted to thank Suzanne and Jean. I met them earlier this year, and they shared some really interesting things about me and my grandmother, who's passed, and I just wanted to thank them. I didn't have the opportunity to thank them.
Thank you very much, dear.
Thank you. I'm glad we were able to bring in, you know, your family member. It means a lot to us. Thank you, dear.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, thank you for calling and expressing that, Moria. How long do investigations take? Do people expect you to have the ability to jump right in and solve a crime of a disappearance quickly?
It's like a layer of an onion. You get the first stage, and you meditate, take the notes, and then second and third stage. With the Christine Shetty case, it took probably like from point of information to being found about a year, and she was found exactly where we said, in the sand dirt mix. With the Mickey Scheller case, we actually went with the family out to retrace the energy, and that was a local case. Time we got on board with that, I think it was about 5 days.
Yeah. Mickey Scheller is from Butler County, and this was when the mom had contacted us through some other people and asked us to work on. He had disappeared, and what we did is we had walked around to some locations, like where he worked at, also where he lived at, and we could tell that he did not run away. We felt that he was in spirit, and we felt that there was just this energy about it. So as we were walking down Kelly Road with the mom, we got this really energy that our body just slammed against the windows, and she'll validate that. And we go, we're getting this eerie feeling here about he's in this area near these pine trees, and it was raining so hard. And as we went to head up that way, her car was bottoming out. And so the next morning they went, and they actually found him within 50 feet. So
Barbara from Pittsburgh has an interesting question. Let's get her into the conversation. Hi, Barbara. Welcome. You're on the air. Hello, Barbara? Nope, we don't have Barbara, unfortunately. Well, her question actually was, how liable are you? I'm doing this psychically. No, it was written on the screen. How liable are you if you predict something wrong during your work with the police?
I think it's like any investigation. Police officers don't promise anything, and it's up to them. I'm not solving the case. I'm given the information and the extra tools and the clues. They're solving it.
What if though, I think what she's getting at is that, and it's unfortunate we weren't able to actually talk to her, but I think what she's trying to say is, we're trying to find out is, let's say you give police information, you describe somebody that you have, whose image has come into your mind. And that
never happened yet.
It's never happened. The Christine Shetty case.
We've been accurate up to this point.
Christine Shetty, they got 25 years in prison. Jason and Junior, we even got the names on that one.
So, Barbara, in answer to your question,
it hasn't happened yet.
Never been wrong, so they don't worry about that. Nettie on Twitter asks, what was the most memorable case for you?
I have to say, there's two. One, the local case, John Yelnick, and then also the Kaylee Anthony case.
Very memorable, because we got involved with the Kaylee Marie Anthony case in Florida. We didn't know anything about it through Christine Shetty, and then giving leads on that. And then we were the ones feeling that she was already crossed over, but they kept thinking that she was still with us. So that was kind of memorable. But we have many, many.
And we worked with private investigator Dominic Casey on that case, who worked for the Anthony family.
But we have many just. People who are just normal people. So she was just one of many normal cases that just happened to have a turn, and the media picked up on it. But the John Yelnick case, that was really interesting, because the state trooper who, you know, you honor state troopers and respect people who uphold the law, and to find out that, you know, a state trooper had committed a crime to a dentist whose name was John Yelnick, and the things that happened to him was just, it was hard to wrap your head around that, you know, how could a law enforcement person do that? So that was very saddening to realize that a good profession, and 90% of them are good people, that, Kevin Foley had killed this guy and cut his throat, and that was bad.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guests are psychic sisters Suzanne Vincent and Jean McKenzie Vincent. We will hear about their adventures in ghost hunting after we take a break. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guests are psychic sisters Suzanne Vincent and Jean McKenzie Vincent. In our first segment, we focused on their work with law enforcement and families in solving cold cases, and we're going to move on in this segment to their work on ghost hunting. But before we do that, one question that occurred to me, we pointed out earlier that you do this work pro bono. You do not
Absolutely.
Charge people a fee. So do you have careers, or what do you do to pay the bills?
I substitute teach and I tutor, so I get my bills like paid like that. So.
Okay. And I'm a hairdresser, and also we do psychic teas. You know, we do little events like that, or corporate parties. So
entertainment.
But most of the time that's like, you know, should I change jobs, or you know, if I should, how's grandma on the other side? It's not heavy stuff like people being murdered or stuff like that or missing. Mm-hmm. So
that was very fashionable back in the 20s and 30s, back in the day in the United States, and I guess all over for that matter. Now, today is Halloween Eve, so people are interested in ghosts and goblins at this time of year. and we hear all the time, as I'm sure you do, about certain things being haunted and who knows what's true and what isn't. But I understand you just did a ghost hunt in Bellevue. So
yes.
What did you do there? What did you find? Were there really... I'm starting to believe you guys. So did you really see or experience the presence of an apparition, of a ghost?
We did Andrew Bain Library, and Amanda Bain is the ghost in spirit. And since there's a group of people there and non-believers and skeptics, we let them photograph and see if they pick up any orbs or any hazes. And then we'll look at what they came back with on the ghost hunt throughout the Andrew Bain Library. And many people had captured to wrap their head around, like, what is this? And a bouncing orb that was traveling. One lady was standing in, to her left, and a person she didn't know to her right, where the orb had bounced from one being captured to the other phone, just in streaks of, like, colors. And so people come together, and they analyze what they captured. So, yes, different energy forces in different forms. Orbs.
I think the Andrew Bain Library is one of the most haunted places around here. It's a good haunting.
Why?
Because every time we go there for a ghost hunt, almost every single person gets something on their phone, orb streaks, or they feel something touching them. They get cold spots, and several people actually see in the apparition. And it's so unusual for that. Every time we go there, it
what
happens.
Does it look like? Like a ghost, like the kind of ghost you see in the movies.
Well, some people will capture an orb
with
the
ectoplasm. Like, remember in the main hall, the ectoplasm, where you could see sometimes like an orb will expand into like a smoky white energy, and in spiritualism, that ghost can appear to you in the body form by taking the energy out of the people around them, and they start to actually form.
Are we talking like a Ghostbusters type ghost that's globular, or are we talking about like an uninvited type ghost?
No, this is a good ghost. She's watching her library. Okay. She wants to make sure that her books are taken care of, and she wants to make sure that the building is taken care of. And she was very upset that they cut down her 400-year-old elm tree, and they keep cutting the trees down. And she does appear to the librarians, and she's to the staff and people.
If you bring back a book that's really overdue, are you in trouble with that ghost?
And I have
orbs. I think she'll follow you home
from the library
and get you.
So she doesn't just stay on the premises.
No, I'm kidding with that. Okay. Yes, she does.
And she messes with phones. Like if people would send the orbs to you, it would say yesterday.
But on our ghost hunt, other people who were non-believers end up believing something, and because they had something tug them or touch them, and then
like
we.
If you're talking in the library, she'll tell you to shush.
No, she'll
pop a door open. People have seen that.
Or turn
computers turn on and off. You'll have to come next year. You'll be amazed.
I would be interested. I think there was a time in my life where I never wanted to see anything like that, and now I think I might be ready. And apparently, you guys, you're sort of used to this because you were talking earlier about you grew up in a house that you say was haunted.
Yes.
By who or what?
It was the former owner. And we ended up getting rid of him by doing a cleansing in the house, and we had to search out and research, you know, how to get rid of an entity in your house that you really don't want. And there was a process we had searched out to.
And then also, we had up there in Cambridge Springs, up in the Riverside Inn up there. There was a lot of very negative ghosts up there too, and we did a cleansing. And there's rituals to get rid of negative ghosts up there. There was negative ghosts.
What would be a ritual? How do you get rid of a negative ghost?
We're Catholic, so we use our Catholic rituals, which is the first thing we do is we get some holy water. We do this prayer to Saint Michael, and we do the signs of the crosses in each room. We have people burn some sage, and also keep saying the prayer to Saint Michael.
And salt around the perimeter.
And salt around the outskirts. And we did that for the Travel Channel on TV for the Dead Files. We had done that. And then we also did a home in Point Breeze.
Did it work?
Yes.
And we did a private home.
The ghosts were gone.
The hotel is gone.
Yes.
And a private home here in Point Breeze. We also did that ritual, but she was having a lot of problems because her home was built on the old slaughterhouse area in Point Breeze, and she said that she could still feel them coming back. So we gave her the tools to use maybe on a weekly basis until they're gone. We believe in the power of God and the power of good, and it's really good over evil, and telling them to get the heck out of here.
Are the ghosts, okay, just going along with your, you know, putting this in a religious perspective, are the ghosts influenced by dark forces, by devils, or is that not always the case?
There are very bad places out there. Unless you've experienced it or gone into it, you can definitely have problems, but you need to know it's good over evil and have the tools. We don't deal with demonic forces. There's other people who are more, that's more their genre, but you can definitely pick up on it. But you, a cleansing will remove some of the negative energy.
We are talking with the Psychic Sisters, Suzanne Vincent, Jean McKenzie Vincent. We have a couple minutes here left for phone calls at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. What are the situations that are conducive to bringing about ghosts? Is there a consistency or a consistent aspect to the places where these ghosts show up?
Yes, I'm writing that in my book, which will be coming up next year. One of the things is usually some sort of a tragedy will happen, and the person is reliving that tragedy over and over again in their house. You know, say they were strangled or murdered or fell down the stairs or burnt in a fire. So their ghosts usually appear a lot in that kind of energy, or they're concerned about something not being taken care of, something they love, like their house or their jewelry or something, and they're very concerned. So you can have, you know, kind of good ghosts, sometimes ghosts that are not too good, and then you can also have, like, demonic ghosts, you know?
Or you can have loved ones who just after they cross over, they come back just to let you know we're still with you, we're still around you, and you can kind of feel like, you know, I feel grandma around, or you feel your family around
you. How do you know that's not somebody, though, that just wants to feel that presence, that wants to believe that person that they love? And it's very understandable that you love somebody so much and they're gone. You want to believe that they're out there somewhere, and that they are still aware of you, and they're still, you know, trying to maintain contact with you. So it's something that might make one skeptical, because it's something people want to believe, but that might not necessarily be true, if for no other reason than it violates all the laws of logic, or what we think of as logical.
In my personal experience, that's what I feel. And that's what I've gotten the impression from. The same impression I could feel if it's my grandmother, the same impression if I could feel if when I do the remote viewing and profiling for a victim. I don't know, you know, what the victim looks like, but I know that feeling, and it comes out. I saw that face, and when I have the energy over here, I could feel her face and feel her image. So it kind of goes together.
You know, last night we were at Rivers Casino doing a small dinner for the VIPs. And there, that's more entertainment, so to speak, than, say, like a mediumship. And some of the people got profound readings that they couldn't wrap their head around it. But how did you know names, or how did you know, about the ring, that person who had that ring? That was very interesting.
Well, to that point, let's go to a caller. We have Eric in Squirrel Hill with a question along those lines. Hi, Eric. You're on Essential Pittsburgh with the Psychic Sisters.
Hi, Eric.
Are you able to predict the future? I think we answer offline. Thank you.
Okay, Eric, thank you. He's asking, are you able to predict the future?
I don't know if you predict the future or not, but you can get I believe in free will and free choice, and a framework that you can work within it. If you, I don't believe in predicting the future, but you can get a general. We've had dreams and stuff where we did predict a couple things that happened. We felt we didn't go public with it, but we made a note of it, and things did come. Through in the dream state, some things that had happened. So there is a wiggle room with it.
Has anyone ever questioned your sanity, or have you ever questioned your own sanity?
I'm fine.
No.
Yeah, and
I'm fine.
And
fine.
And you, when you realize you're helping people, and you realize law enforcement comes back and says you helped us, and how did you know this person was an electrician? How did you know this person worked in this different state? How did you know all this if you didn't do it? How do you know this? And I wasn't there to do it. So,
I'm thinking more along the lines of the ghostly images, which brings us to another question. Let's go to Nancy from Cannonsburg. Hi, Nancy. You're on with the Psychic Sisters.
Hi. I just have to say one thing. I believe, I'm a believer, and I love this stuff. And my husband and I have gone to at least four different haunted houses for different type of tours and overnight tours and different things. And we have never seen anything. So we are going to one tonight. And I was wondering, is there anything that I can do to, like, entice them so that I could see something? I really, really want to see something.
Where are you going to? Which place is the location?
We're going to Larimore Mansion in North Versailles.
Bring cookies.
And we were just in the, I don't know if you're familiar with Hillview Manor.
Yes, familiar with Hillview, yes.
In Canada, or in
Newcastle.
Newcastle. We were there last Saturday for an overnight thing.
Okay.
And you're brave.
The only thing I will say in there, I felt nauseated almost the whole time I was in there.
That is a symptom or a sign.
And coldness.
Thank you, Nancy. We appreciate that. I'm, you know, just from what Nancy was just saying, I'm curious if you guys, have you ever been really scared?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. The Cambridge Springs, that was
Cambridge Springs
was
very
bad.
Scary. That ghost was...
Let's go to Liz from Cranberry. One final question. Go ahead, Liz. You're on with the Psychic Sisters.
Hi. I was curious to know what you think of TV psychics like Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium, and whether she is legit or not.
I personally think, this is Suzanne, I like Teresa Caputo. I think that she's very gifted, and I think that she really delivers the message to the people around her and gives a lot of closure. So I think she's very gifted, and I think she's the real deal.
From what we see on TV, we never personally met her, but I like her. I like her nails.
The Psychic Sisters, Suzanne Vincent, Jean McKenzie Vincent, before I let you go ahead and plug your book. It's coming out, right?
Yes, it's coming out. It's going to be Psychic Detectives. It's going to be of a lot of the cases that we have helped, 8 to 10 cases with law enforcement and missing persons. And also we'll be having a ghost hunting book coming out following that one. And you can reach me at SuzanneVincent.com if you have any questions.
And we'll be trying to doing ghost hunting tours too, so you can hit the website for that.
Yeah, we'll put a link on our website at WESA.FM. I want to thank you both for being here, the Psychic Sisters, Suzanne Vincent, Jean McKenzie Vincent. It's been a pleasure
having you with us here
in studio. And, you know, I might not be so skeptical after this. Coming up, we'll travel the backcountry roads of Western Pennsylvania in search of ghosts and mysterious legends. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.